The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, this year marks 100 years of Ireland having its own passport. From a passport in 1925 that still bore reference to the British monarchy to our brown sleeve passports adorned with the harp today, our passport has gone through many iterations and has changed in power over the 100 years of its existence. EPIC, the Irish Emigration Museum, have just opened a new exhibition to mark its centenary, and their historian in residence, Dr. Catherine Healy, joins us now to look back at the history of our international pass. Catherine, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat. Thanks for having me on.
So obviously, when we get our free state status, we want to distinguish ourselves from those who were born and live in Britain.
Yeah, this was an important priority for Irish officials at the time. And the very first passports were issued to the Irish delegation who travelled to Geneva to seek admission to the League of Nations in 1923. And the following year then, the Irish Free State passport is made available to members of the public.
Now, if they were travelling to and from the island of Britain, was there no need for a passport at that time because it was a common travel area, if you like, to use modern parlance.
That's correct, yeah. Documentation wouldn't have been required apart from during the years of World War II when travel permits came in.
Okay, so no passport at all going, of course, north of the border and across the Irish Sea. So the early Irish passport, what was it like?
Well, it was a small green covered passport, Irish Free State Sir Sot Éireann written at the front. The wording inside was very different to the documents that we all have today. It was issued in the name of the Governor General of Ireland on behalf of his Britannic Majesty. Okay. And the bearer was described as a citizen of the Irish Free State and of the British Commonwealth of Nations. And even that actually was seen as a step too far by British officials. They were very insistent that we be described as British subjects on our passports, and Dublin pushed back against that. But there were difficulties for some Irish abroad for a number of years because British consular officials didn't recognise the passport as a result.
So is there any parallel around the world of where a country gets sort of independence from Britain but remains the bearer of British passports?
Yeah, I mean, Canada obviously was a dominion at the same time as well, and they had a similar travel document ahead of Ireland, and that was in part the model that Ireland drew on.
Okay, and to this day, I know if you're in Bermuda, for example, that you have a quasi-British passport. You know, that's one of the aspects of there, even though it effectively runs itself.
Yeah, absolutely. You see the kind of the traces of I suppose historical relationships in the wording in many passports worldwide. The Irish case is interesting because we managed to get wording changed actually before Ireland became a republic. So references to the King and Commonwealth were removed in 1939.
Was that because of the war?
It was in part because of the war. You can see in the records of the Department of External Affairs, Irish officials saying that there's no support on the ground for references to the British monarchy, and they're making a unilateral decision to remove it.
But those who might have got a passport prior to 1939 and who find themselves within the area occupied by the Nazis, they are carrying effectively what looks to the untutored eye like a British passport.
Yes, well, I mean, it would have still been considered a neutral document now, the Irish Free State passport.
Even
the
reference to His Britannic Majesty. You know, if I'm a Gestapo man and I stop someone and they show me this document, I'd probably arrest them on the spot.
Well, I mean, there is actually evidence that Irish passport holders had an easier time, if you like, in occupied Paris compared to British passport holders. The real difficulty were those with British travel documentation who were considered enemy aliens. There was an understanding that the Irish passport was a pretty distinct document at that point in France, at least. Not so much in Japan. That's another story. There was an Irish. There were Irish nuns detained in Japan, and Irish documentation wasn't recognised to the same extent there. In that
obviously
period.
The Germans were familiar with the modern Irish history and what had unfolded. So the very mention of the Irish Free State enabled people to pass muster by the Gestapo.
Yeah, at least in the early years of the war. You know, Beckett, for example, had an Irish passport during the war years, and it's been said that that possibly allowed him to move around a little more easily. Of course, he was a member of the resistance in occupied Paris for a number of years.
Now, there were people who were, if you like, trapped in occupied France, mm-hmm. and they were carrying the old passport. They managed to get a new one. How?
Yeah, these are British passport holders who I suppose hadn't thought to trade in their documents. And Irish diplomats had to work very hard to get emergency passports issued to them as soon as they could prove their entitlement to Irish citizenship. There was one Irish diplomat who remained in Paris during the war, Count O'Kelly, and he travelled to two detention camps to meet Irish prisoners and to certify their eligibility to Irish documentation.
So then there was what they used to call a legation in Vichy, the Vichy part of France, which of course was the shameful part of France, mm-hmm. many people would say. But we had a legation there and they were able to issue documents.
They were, yeah, and they were ferried then to Count O'Kelly, who remained in Paris.
Now, the Irish passport, obviously you have a passport because you're going to travel somewhere. Mm-hmm. What sort of exotic places did early Irish passport holders go to?
Yeah, I mean, typically the people who got the earliest passports came from more privileged backgrounds. One of my favourite stories in the exhibition, we've copies of two passports given to an Irish couple from Cork in the 1920s, which they used to honeymoon in North Africa. They got a boat across England after marrying in Dunleary, boated from there to France, went down to Marseille and got a steamer from there to Algiers. But of course, you know, in most instances, the passport was a route out of Ireland to North America, to Australia, to all the other mm-hmm. Major destinations that Irish migrants went to. We have a copy of a passport belonging to an Irish woman who left Ireland in the 50s, aged 21, and she was joining her fiancé in Canada, and they got married a week after her arrival, but she brought her wedding dress and wedding cake on the boat along with her first time leaving Ireland. Mm.
You've got some extraordinary pictures in the exhibition, extraordinarily large families.
Yeah.
There's one picture of one family, and I think there are maybe eight children, and maybe already there's an older child or two in America waiting for them to arrive.
Yeah, that I think that is the image of Bridget Casey shortly after she landed in New York with, I think, eight of her children, and her husband had gone ahead of her along with two of their children. So I'd say it was quite a logistical nightmare getting everyone ready for that journey.
Now, the value of the Irish passport, we're told that it's number one in the world sometimes number three in the world. How does that value accrue to a passport?
Sure. In the case of the Irish passport, of course, it's I think probably the only that will give you the right both to live and work in the EU and in the UK. And just to give you an idea of the huge increase in numbers, I mean, in 1994, 3 years after I was born, you had just over 185,000 Irish passports being issued. Last year it was over 1 million. So you've obviously members of the now very, very large Irish diaspora increasingly recognising the value of Irish documentation.
Mm. And that 1 million that's issued, does that include renewals and or are these fresh applications?
These are new and renewed.
And renewed, so mm-hmm. we have to distinguish. Mm-hmm. So in terms of the people who are applying, obviously there are people who are nervous of Mr. Trump's America mm-hmm. and want to find another way of going, of living. And then there are those who just feel, whether they're from Northern Ireland or from the island of Britain, I've got an Irish granddaddy from mm-hmm. wherever. I qualify, therefore I don't have to wait in those terrible queues mm-hmm. at the airports of mm-hmm. Spain to get in for my holidays.
Yeah, I think on the day that Article 50 was triggered, the Irish Embassy in London got over 700,000 contacts about people looking to get an Irish passport. And I suppose for a lot of people, it's about reinforcing not just their Irish, but their European identity too.
But for some, it's a pure matter of convenience, isn't it?
Yeah, that is true.
There are
yeah.
some diehard unionists, we're told, in Northern Ireland who have signed up for the Irish passport simply for ease of travel.
That is true. That is true also, yes. Mm.
So what can we expect to see in the exhibition?
Well, we have a mix of historical documents. We opened a call a number of weeks ago for stories from the public. So we have family photos and records that have been donated to us. a lady called Christina Reynolds. Her father died last year, and in his attic in New York, she came across a copy of his passport in a briefcase that she believed he emigrated on in the 1950s when he was aged 20. Cloncowley, his hometown in Longford, written on the front. There's a lot of emotions to this, the kind of stories, and you see how much the passport has come to mean as a family memento. And we have a short film as well within the exhibition, looking at the stories of people who've received passports over the last number of years. For example, Rebecca Tallon de Havilland was one of the first transgender people to get a passport as a woman. And we also have some displays allowing people to uncover some of the secret security features in the current passport, of which there are many.
Very good. It sounds like it's a fascinating exhibition. It's on at the Irish Immigration Museum, the Epic Museum in Dublin, and the historian in residence, Dr. Catherine Healy. Catherine, thank you very much for joining us on the programme today.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.